Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome in to the Women United show on this Tuesday afternoon, and we welcome you in. Call in 347-215-8717. That's 347-215-8717. And it is Wednesday evening, and you may have heard the story that has gone viral regarding the 11 women that were removed from a Napa wine train tour in Napa, California. These women were a part of a, I believe it was a reading book club, and there were 10 black women and one white woman, and these women were insanely removed from the train because, guess what? They were laughing too loudly. Wow. Having too much fun on the wine train tour. I thought that when you're on a wine train tour, you would probably do a lot of laughing and talking. I live here in Houston, and in the downtown, Midtown area, there's a little, like a little trolley bus. A little pedal trolley bus where you can drink your beer and take a tour through the Midtown downtown area of Houston. And I tell you, when you see those little trolleys go by, you can hear those people. They're laughing. They're having a wonderful, fabulous time. And everything is just great. Everything is just wonderful. And you primarily see white people on this little trolley train. Because you pedal a little train, you drink your beer and your wine, and you have fun. I haven't seen very many black people, even though I want to do the little tour, just to experience it, just to see some sights downtown and midtown. But I was appalled when I found out that these women were removed from the train. I just could not believe it. I think that it's awful and horrendous. And we just want to hear your thoughts on that story. Welcome in, caller from 816. How are you? I'm sitting in for Mother Hattie today.
This is David Alleen. I'm all right. I didn't hear what you were saying because I just got on. What were you saying about the train?
Okay, let me open up this line. I think this may be... Is this Marvin?
Yes, it is.
Hey, Marvin, how are you? This is Ashira. Mother Hattie will be calling in shortly.
Okay, I'm fine. How are you doing these days?
Doing well, doing well. I was just talking about, I don't know if you guys have heard about the story of the black women that were removed from the wine train, wine tour train in Napa, California.
Yeah, I heard of it. That's up here in my neck of the woods. I heard about it. I go used to work.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I used to work up in the Napa area years ago and whatnot.
Okay. Yes, well, David, they were removed from the train because apparently they were laughing too loudly. And so some people on the train apparently complained. And so these women were asked to be removed from the train. And so at the next stop, they were asked to... asked to leave the train, and the police and some police officers who were, to my surprise, were surprised that they were being removed from the train because they were laughing too loud. Mind you, this is a wine tour, and when people drink, they may become a little jolly, And besides, it's a wine tour train. You're supposed to have fun. And I just read an article on Melanoid Nation speaking about that area, Napa Valley, Marvin. I didn't know. It's listed in the Sundown Town book as Sundown Town, that area. It was highly populated with Ku Klux Klan at one time, and Ku Klux Klan actually wanted to hold a rally there, but the Jewish community quelled that, so they wouldn't allow them to come there. But there is a mural there, I read, that has a picture of the Klan, the Klansmen.
I wonder what town it's in. I wonder what town it is.
I'm going to pull out my book in a second, and I will look for it and see, but it's supposed to be somewhere along that area.
There's a city of Napa. It's Napa County,
mm-hmm.
and there's also a city of Napa, but in the county there's also a lot of little towns. It's wine country and whatnot. And I used to work in this town, in this restaurant, back in the early 70s when I was going to college, called Boise Hot Springs. And whatnot, and pretty much in a lot of rural areas of California, you got a lot of redneck cowboy types. You have a lot of the so-called white people that live in California have emigrated here from Texas and Oklahoma. That's what you have here. The black people, the so-called black people in California, have come from Texas and Louisiana. A preponderance of people from Louisiana and Texas and whatnot. That's pretty much, whereas on the East Coast, where I come from, most of the so-called black people come from the Carolinas and Virginia and Georgia and the Atlantic southern states. Well, the ones out here come from the Southwest. So you have a tremendous amount of Texans and Okies and whatnot in California, so that doesn't surprise me. But the Napa area, the wine country, you have a lot of people of Italian ancestry that migrated here in the 1850s and started this wine industry and whatnot, you know. And they weren't treated very well by the Anglos, the so-called Ku Klux Klan, too. So it's kind of, you know, interesting, you know, demographic in that area. It's a very scenic pretty area, I might add. A nice, fertile area where you can grow stuff and everything. You know, as you go up in that area, it's very fertile. Most of California is, and there's a big wine growing industry. And also, there's a little further north in there, starting there, is a big cannabis marijuana growing area. It's so fertile, you know. So they grow, you know, among the best marijuana in the world. It's comparable, you know. That's why the grapes probably grow so well. But I didn't know about that. I didn't know about all of that at all. But you can rest assured, you got a lot of rednecks in California, like other places and whatnot, and cowboy mentality and whatnot.
Well, in my experience,
tend to be as racist as anybody else. You know?
That's what I was just about to say. White people in California, by and large, are just as racist as anybody else. And these groups of like super liberals, when I was lived in Berkeley in I think 1970, they were rioting in the streets over Vietnam. Telegraph Avenue is like the main street that goes through Berkeley up to the campus. And I had a job on the other side of Telegraph Avenue. And I'd be going to work in the morning. I'd have to walk through a cloud of tear gas that was on Telegraph Avenue. I mean, you could see it. I mean, it was thick. These kids... going to Berkeley, you know, they regarded themselves as super liberal and super cool, and they were just as racist as anybody else. And the thing about it which is typical, is this is not the way they thought of themselves. It's just the way they were. And they just regarded black people as being inferior to them and people to be dealt with as inferior people. On the other hand, the blacks there at that
which
time,
are very few.
A great extent, unfortunately, being like Marvin said, from the deep south, Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, but mainly Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Oklahoma, of course. These black people were like completely out of it. They had no relationship whatsoever to the counterculture, intellectual counterculture atmosphere in liberal California, places like Berkeley, you know, mostly campus areas, you have schools in San Francisco and so on. These intellectual communities, these black people were totally out of it. And from the standpoint of these white people, frankly, I could see how they would regard black people as being inferior to them because they just weren't with it, you know, and the whole deal was to be with it. Well, these black people that I came in contact with, for the most part, they were like black people any place else. You know, the black people living in these little black ghetto areas in Berkeley might as well have been in Chicago, might as well have been in Brooklyn. You know, it was, you know, they were just living like black folks. So, but I was really surprised at how racist these people were when they were, their whole trip was being non-racist and being part of a new social vanguard, and they were just fooling themselves, basically. And I'd imagine that if they were being followed, the careers that they would have ended up in would have been just the same as if they were, you know, the basic California rednecks that they grew up around. It's very interesting to contemplate what white people think of themselves and how other groups see them. Because what would happen is they would come to Berkeley, you know, going to school, and the revolution would be taking place in Berkeley, and they'd be demonstrating and raising hell and having meetings and this and that. And then summer would come, and you know, they'd have their summer break, and they'd all go home, and they would basically be the same, you know, suburbanite redneck kids that they grew up as. Then in September, school would start again, and they'd come back to school and start the revolution again. So I'm not surprised that this would happen in that area. So but the police removed these black women?
They were removed from the train, and they were refunded their fare. And what I was thinking about, well, if they're refunded their fare, I know that
they're... Wait a minute, who removed them? Were they removed by
the
police,
No, the police was waiting. They were waiting there. The train, Caltrans, whoever, I don't even think that line is part of Caltrans. It's some other concern. They had them removed. They walked them through the length of the train, off the train, and once they got off the train, they were refunded their fare. The police didn't have anything to do with taking them off the train. They didn't commit any kind of a crime or anything. But my my concern was this. I know that area quite well. I used to ride motorcycles up there for years, and I worked up there. And it's not very, it doesn't have very good transportation to get back down to the Bay Area. They obviously came from somewhere in the Bay Area, which is like 70 miles from wherever they were, depending, you know, on where they were in Napa. And so if they refunded them their money, what are they going to do, take a cab back down there? Or are they going to let them take a train with this line that they just put them off back down?
And yes, I think, and that's one thing.
Greyhound also goes from that area to the Bay Area. So I guess that would be an option also. But I was curious as to, you know, what time this happened and how are they going to get back. If it's late at night and Greyhound does, in fact, run a line, and they probably do, they do that maybe once every hour, 2 hours, but off hours, man, it might be longer than that. That's what I was curious. They didn't mention anything about how they went back, but they were refunded their fare, and that was that. To me, if somebody refunded me my fare, it's like saying, we don't want you on our facility. You know, so would they let them buy a ticket to go back or what? That's what I was.
So what are they planning to do? Are they planning to sue?
No, the sister said, we didn't do anything. This was wrong. And since we weren't charged with anything, we don't think we should have been. We demand that you give us an apology. We want an apology from the, you know, the facility. The facility responded and said, we're going to have an internal investigation. You know, the normal stuff. The same thing the police do and, you know, the government and everything else. They have this, excuse my French, bullshit protocol that they go through, you know, which is supposed to be this investigatory process, and then they'll come up with a decision later or an explanation later, and we're just going to have to take it or leave it. That's usually the way that those things go.
Can I say something? Good evening, everybody.
Yeah, good evening, Brother Brown. How you doing?
How you doing?
Evening, Brother Brown. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. The problem I have with this is one thing. Why do we continue to try to blend in with white people? Why can't we create something for us? We already know about the racial tensions in this country because they've been here over 400 years. Nothing is going to change that atmosphere.
Okay, well, them sisters decided to take that wine train. They ain't African-owned wine train, man. Well, maybe that's what we need to do. But as far as I'm concerned, that's as far as we need to go, as far as what you said. You know, I agree with you, though. Yeah, we don't need to concern ourselves and get involved in this stuff. But the what they wanted to do, we don't have. So, yeah, maybe we need to set up something where we could have some sort of an entertainment situation like that, man, to where we can enjoy it and be treated like the way we should be treated.
Let's look at what we did have. Okay, let's look at what we had before immigration. Before immigration, we had our own businesses, our own places of entertainment, our own nightclubs, our own bars. We had all of that. We got tricked through this tomfoolery that integration would bring some sort of equality. Integration did nothing but bankrupt our asses. Excuse my friend. It bankrupted our businesses. We took every dime that we had to the white man's business, and he closed ours down. He redistricted all of our stores. He redistricted all of our communities. He did it, and we sit by and let him do it because we thought integration was the best thing that ever happened to us. Now that we know integration is not the best thing, it has not done anything to progress our people, then let's go back to the drawing board and create our own. If we did it once, we can do it again.
I totally agree, Brother Brown. Now, what I want you to do is explain to me how that and what that would do in this situation with these sisters. That's kind of what I'm interested in, since that was a major topic. I'm really interested. Now, I agree with everything you say, and I think those are just factual. That's shit that can't be refuted. But these sisters, these 11 sisters, well, 10 sisters, I think it was 10 sisters and one white
woman. Yeah, 10 and one white lady.
One white woman. What I want to hear what you have to say is to that their situation, what happened to them, and what should be done or what could be done. Well, give me some kind of feedback on that. That's really what I want to hear about, man.
Well, first of all, this was a lesson learned by them.
Mm-hmm.
See, sometimes you go through these situations, but nonetheless,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's just like a black man sometimes dealing with a white woman, and you know, at the end of a conversation with an argument, she calls you a nigger. Well, you mm-hmm. was always a nigger.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But just never call you one.
Right.
Okay, so now,
right.
So now we got this situation. You with the white, you with these white folks in Napa Valley, which is just like being in Silicon Valley. And now all of a sudden you want to taste wine. That's fine, but then, you know, when you get to be in your own element of having fun, they don't want you to have fun in their environment.
Exactly.
Well, guess what? If you had stayed in your own environment,
right?
You understand me? Bought you some wine.
Totally. I really do.
Yeah. See, we have to restructure how we think.
Mm-hmm.
See, we have been thinking along these lines ever since 1965. Ever since the Freedom Rider, ever since the 60s, that we're going to get together with white folks. And I heard Marvin mention that. And, you know, being an ex-Black Panther, yeah, when we was out there in the streets in the 60s, you know, we had some white protesters because they asked them to want to go to Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
After that, after Nixon killed the draft in the 60s, in 1972 was the last draft. Because mm-hmm. I just missed it by one day. That was the last draft. After that, there was no more drafting to go to Vietnam. Guess what happened? All them kids, all them white kids with the horn-rimmed glasses and the long hair, they cut their hair, they threw off their army field coats and put on a three-piece suit and went to work in their daddy's business.
But, you know, a lot of the progressive black brothers and sisters were saying that was what they had, the option they had, and that was what they was going to do, and basically rejected them. From what I remember from that era, because I was heavily into that, you know, that was the consensus among the what we would call conscious brothers and sisters at that point in period in time, man. They weren't fooled. A lot of us weren't fooled. And maybe the overall society and culture, African culture was, but there was a group of people within that steadfastly held to that position.
Oh, yeah. There was a group of people.
I was among that, in that group.
There was a group of people during that era that did not primarily deal with that element of mixing up with them. Okay, they were hardcore people. You know, they stayed to their, they stuck to their guns, they stuck to their plan, you know, and I'm dealing with some of my mentors from that era right now. Some of them are passed on. But the thing about it is that we have to revamp our thinking. We have to understand, it's not something that's going to be automatic. Because
no, it has to be developed, brother. A new man has
right.
to be created.
A new mentality has to be developed.
Generations, we need to just cut off and say, they're already adult and everything. There's absolutely nothing we can do with them.
Right.
No, we have to go from the bottom up as opposed
we
to...
We have to start with the youth by telling them the truth. See, and when you have been told lies and have been perpetrated to tell lies to our youth, and they grow up, that's why we have so many dysfunctional youth right now today, because a lot of people told them that, you know, you... And they had this cliche, you know, you can be anything you want to be in America. And that was a lie. Then people looked at this BS with the public, with the last two presidential elections with Obama, and now everybody got this dream-minded mentality. You know, we had a black president. No, we had a president that was half black, but he catered to what them white folks told him to do because they the one that put his hand past in office.
Well, that's what the president of the United States has to do anyway. Anybody that thinks they're going to vote for the president, somehow you're going to do something that's going to be specific for their little group. It don't work that way. There's only one group they work for.
We need to go back and understand the first presidential election of this country. Okay, it didn't happen in Washington, D.C. It happened in New York City.
And it was an
African man. Well, the first man to run this country was a black man.
Yeah, he was an African man.
Right. The first person to be elected as the president was George Washington. He wasn't the first president. He was the first elected president.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to remember something. Where did he get elected at? He got elected in New York City. And what was in, we should take a look at this now. The financial obligators of this country with them 13 colonies was Wall Street. That's who ran the political machine in this country from the beginning. And what was the largest commodity that was traded on Wall Street at the time it was created? It was us.
Mm-hmm.
So that let us, that should let that that teaching alone should let us know that the financiers of the banking industry control the presidential election. That should send a message to our brain. If they're controlling the election and who gets in office, then we got to start controlling how we monitor our finances. I told somebody we have an annuity plan with the union I retired from. And I tell these young guys, I said, pull your money out of the annuity, let the government tax it, you understand me, and put it in a safe deposit box. I'm going to roll my money over. I said, let me tell you something about rolling your money over. If you roll your money over from one plan to a 401k, I said, your money is not insured. I know a sister that rolled her money over in a 401k, and when the market crashed about 7 years ago, she lost $85,000 that she had saved, and she couldn't retire. So we have to take a long look at the creation of these programs by these slick European investors that bankrupt us as a people.
They bankrupt each other. That's how cold-blooded
they
are.
So you know they're going to
bankrupt us.
They steal from each other.
Yeah.
You understand me? And then turn around and go borrow more money. They have had more. I look at American greed all the time. They have had more white people. They have schemed millions and millions of dollars, scam people, Ponzi schemes, all over this country. And they receive the slaps on the hand, 5 years, 10 years. Okay? And we just don't take a look at what it's going to take to turn us around. If we have to reinvent the wheel when it comes to establishing financial institutions and businesses, then that's fine. Malcolm X said one thing about business, and I'll never forget it. He said, we need to understand that every black man that goes in business is a reseller. That means you have to resell what you buy from the people that create it. But in reselling what you buy, it has to be sold back to your people, and your people need to understand that to support your business as resellers, not retailers, because that is the only way that we can economically empower ourselves. And that's what has not been taught to this generation. And it's out of whack now. If you start a store right now, I guarantee you, 10 black people will walk in your store and buy nothing and walk across the street to the A-Rap and buy everything he got. The mentality of the white man's ice being colder than the black man's ice is something that was introduced through the miseducation of the Negro with Dr. Carter G. Woodson. We need to make everybody 12 that can, from 12 on up that can read. We got to make that a mandatory element in our household that you read The Miseducation of the Negro. And then there was a book he wrote before that called The Education of the Negro Prior to 1865, which I don't hear many people talk about. These are two prophetic books written by Dr. Woodson that we need to make it mandatory that our children read and read it with a degree of understanding.
Well, you got to get them to read, period, first of all. Then you can generate
like
that. Huh. I mean, that's the main thing, get them to read. You know, I mean, in this generation, pretty much it's all electronic. I don't think there's a hell of a whole lot of reading. And from what some of the blogs that I see online, the way these people write and their communication skills are limited. So I'm not saying the content of what they say is limited, because oftentimes it's very insightful. But
well,
the mechanics of what they try to say is terrible and whatnot. And so that means to me that a lot of
most of these kids that graduate from high school, they're not taught writing skills, and when they get to college, nobody has taught them how to write.
Yeah,
and
but you know what? Their parents should. Because when I was a child, that's what my parents did. They corrected me. My parents weren't no college-educated people. but they
right.
they were read, well read. They understood, you know, the structure of the language to where when we made mistakes, they corrected us. These kids
right.
nowadays are not getting that. They're speaking just the way their parents speak.
Right, and the same,
and they have the same basic type habits and whatnot, and that's the whole thing. We need to develop a new man and woman, you know. But we have to do it. We have to do it right. It's as simple
well,
as
what
that.
What I've been doing is going around in various low income communities, getting ready to establish reading clinics for kids 5 on up. And what the way I'm doing it. I'm working with some students from the black college up in Princess Anne Maryland, University of Maryland Eastern Shore, and I'm going and getting some of these college students to volunteer that's taking educational classes to become school teachers. I'm getting them to volunteer their time, you understand me, to help teach these kids from 5 on up how to read.
See, stuff like that is essential, man. That's...
Yeah.
Are there any sisters that have any comments about this? I really want to hear what they have to say. Any sisters online? See, that's...
Marvin, it's just me. I'm not sure where Mother Hattie or Mother Dunning is, or Sarah.
Well, this educational aspect, that to me, that's the utmost important. Stuff like that, man, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is what, you know.
I agree.
And that's what me and Sister Sharon talked about last week. We need to develop pocket schools.
Mm-hmm.
See, I understand Umar Johnson's concept of trying to buy St. Paul's College and all of that. That's fine. But if you can't sit around and wait till you gather enough money to start.
No, you can't.
Yeah.
You can't.
You can't wait till you do that. We need
nope.
to take. We need to learn how to take the basics of what we got and work with it. Go to the library, get your 15 kids, run a room. Sometimes they give you a room free. You just got to sign up on a piece of paper, and they donate a room to you.
And there's no limit of talent and expertise within our community. There's no limit. I mean, are you
right.
kidding me?
That's what I'm saying.
There's absolutely no, it's limitless, man, for anything such as this that we need to do. It's limitless, man. It's simple as that.
Go to these Negro churches. Because I'm working with the churches, too, and some of these pastors have a liberated mind. But like they said, we never, a lot of things that I have introduced to these people, you know, they're down with it. They're ready to go. They're gung-ho about it. We just had a meeting last week because we have a heroin epidemic up here on the Eastern Shore of Maryland.
Is that right?
Yeah, they got a terrible heroin epidemic up here. And because of the kids running up and down the street, 13, 14 years old, 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning, I told them they need a curfew. People
yeah.
say, you know that's against their civil rights. I told them they ain't had no damn civil rights. Because as soon as one of these kids get killed or shot or stabbed up to death, the first thing they're going to say, well, where's the police? And I explained it to them plain and simple. The police is not a babysitter for your children.
Yep.
That's not their job.
Well, I would think they would need a curfew.
Running up and down the street, and they got so bad that in some sections, man, they lay their bicycles across the street and block the traffic.
Really?
At 11 o'clock at night. They're high past me to be in the house.
Yeah, well, see, that's our problem. That's something that you know the authorities, they haven't been able to solve this problem, which means they can't. So that means it's something we need to deal with. We need
Thank
to solve. We got to figure out how to solve it.
Man. That's right.
You know,
and
so
I told them, I said, if the parents are not, I said, if the kids are out there and you had to pick them up after curfew, put a fine on the parents. And if you start fining these parents for that BS of not protecting their children and having them in the house, it'll stop.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it'll stop. They'll stop having these kids all up and down the street. Makes no sense. And like I said, as soon as one of them get jammed up, as soon as one of them get hurt, because we had a shooting up here about 3 weeks ago, they were at a party. This territorial bullshit, excuse my language, one group of kids against another group of kids, you know, and the kid got shot in the head. Well, him and the other boy had been what they call beefing for over a year behind some foolishness. You know, and the parents go along with the kid. Well, he ain't nothing no way. My son could have whipped him. My son, see, all of that foolishness. Teach these kids how to get along with one. Don't teach them how to hate each other. We got too much of that foolishness.
Yeah, that's all we have.
Teach them how to hate one another. You come from across town and I don't deal with you. And both of y'all in the same boat. You poor, you ain't got nothing, and you're going to be in the same situation the rest of your life. Let's get a grip on this because we can't keep going backwards. And if we start these
problems. It looks like you're doing it. I mean, every time I go online, there's another. I get tired of reading about these, you know.
It's depressing.
This graphic descriptions and videos of this abuse and everything, man. It's just, you know, it's ridiculous, man. You know, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
It don't make no sense, man. I get tired of looking at that and seeing that, man. You know, it's almost insanity, man. You know, you keep doing
that's
the same thing
is.
Over and over again.
It is insanity.
You know, it's crazy.
It's insane to do the same thing over and over and over and get the same results. And that's what we're doing. I mean, I talked to the parents of one of the kids who got killed. And, you know, she said, well, that's right. I got two cousins in the penitentiary. As soon as this boy gets in there, they're going to kill him. What would that solve? And I told them, I said, first of all, instead of teaching our children how to hate, let's start by teaching our children how to love. Let's teach our children, because you come from over there and I come from over here, why can't we be friends? What's stopping us from being friends? Because we don't teach that no more. He come from this section and he come from that section, and we don't like them, all that foolishness. And what do that lead to? They lead to nothing but pure ignorance and stupidity. That's not solving any of our issues. That's not solving any of our problems. We got the same problem and the same issues, and now we have incorporated this gang mentality. We have incorporated this rise in the heroin or distribution. Heroin.
How long has this heroin thing been going on there?
Oh, man, the heroin thing been going on there for about 5 years. It's slowly creeped back and replaced crack cocaine. You really don't even hear that much talk about crack cocaine on the streets now.
Oh, is that right? I often wondered, man, you know, You don't hear too much about it, but it's still out there. Obviously, most drugs. There's always a tremendous amount of crime rotating around drugs. Amount of crime and a tremendous loss. You know.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, when we look at the main element of crime is poverty.
Mm-hmm.
See, and whenever you people poverty means. That a lack of resources to actually live by, and when you have that lack of resources, okay, you're not gonna suffer. So the selling of drugs is used as a means of a way to an end.
Mm-hmm.
But the end result for us in the black community is penitentiary in the graveyard,
mm-hmm.
And we haven't caught on to that. But with this rise in heroin up here, what they're doing. They're taking the heroin and they're cutting it with some kind of painkiller. Not only do you become highly addicted, but when you use it intravenously, it's instant death. They have had more overdoses of heroin addiction in the state of Maryland than anywhere in this country.
Mm.
Maryland is classified as the heroin capital of the East Coast. Baltimore.
Wow, that's really unfortunate. That's something, man.
If you go in downtown Baltimore, they have a market down there called Lexington Market on Utah Street. And if you go in there, what you'll find in there is that you'll find wall-to-wall dope fiends.
Mm.
From 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock in the morning, that whole street, the market and everything is lined up with drug addicts.
Does Baltimore have a high HIV rate since you have all these intravenous users? I'm assuming most of them are shooting heroin because you can get a Jones on heroin by snorting it if you do it long enough.
That's true, because I had one.
Or smoke it. They soldiers came back from Vietnam with Joneses from smoking heroin. So any way you ingest heroin,
they were smoking opium.
Yeah. Well, heroin is opium, but it's stronger.
Right, but once it's refined and cut, you can't smoke. It won't be the same effect. But when it's raw opium, oh yeah, you can smoke and you get high with a big bit. But when
I've seen people roll joint back in the 60s and 70s. I've seen people roll joints who laced it with heroin and smoked it.
Few,
in fact, can smoke it. You can ingest that drug in numerous ways. You can even just swallow it, man. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an opiate. It will get addicted. But what I wanted to know is there a high HIV rate in that area from people shooting drugs? Because that's one of the ways that spread. People sharing needles and whatnot, and they have it, and it just spreads.
If you trace the origin of HIV, and it's a guy that wrote three books, his name is Alan Cantwell.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote a book called AIDS, the Doctor of Death. And Dr. Cantwell was a biochemist. And what he did, he gave you the origin of AIDS. And the truth of the matter is, when you get hepatitis C, you are prescribed a certain medication. That medication that is supposed to control your hepatitis actually breaks down your immune system to make you HIV positive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he broke it down. They won't even let his books be sold in bookstores. Now, Amazon.com will sell his book, but I bought my book directly from him. And he broke it all down to the lowest common denominator. And, you know, I haven't communicated with him now in about maybe a year and a half. But we communicate through email. I asked him how many so-called Negro leaders have actually contacted him. You know, in reference to actually learning about it. He's got documentation from doctors. He's got all kind of proof to show you where this mess come from. He said it was a man-created disease.
From the very beginning. That's
right.
Pretty obvious.
If you don't get hepatitis, that'd be positive.
But you get hepatitis from intravenous drug, using dirty needles and whatnot also.
That's how you get it from eating with dirty
utensils, you know, in a restaurant or something, if you go there frequently enough, if it's on there. I mean, it's easy enough to
get.
I was just concerned with whether, since it's on the rise so much among our people, what it was like there and whatnot.
Because of
the intravenous use, man.
Yeah, I have those dishes for you next week, but I can get them.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know, man, because this whole stuff is all interrelated, man.
Yeah. I know a lady that, what I was trying to do down here in this rural area that I live in, a lot of the kids suffer with ADHD, but a lot of these kids have been exposed to lead and have never been tested.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because
is
of
that
the
right?
Yeah. And what I was doing, they had a health fair at the University of Maryland Eastern Shore, and I met this woman from Baltimore. She works with the health department, and I told she said she would come down here free. Free, no charge. You give all of these kids in Somerset County lead there. And do you know, I try to talk to the churches, I try to talk to the parents, and nobody would want to have their children tested, but we quickly put our children on these drugs from being exposed to lead, don't know what they've been doing, and turn around and put them on medication so we can give a social security check. Then we got to stop this BS. Let's find out where our problems lie. Because lead contamination to the brain in a child actually produces dysfunction.
Yeah, they've known that for a long, long time. Because they banned lead paints, man, and domestic paints use, man,
right.
Back in the beginning of the 60s, the late 50s.
Right.
When they passed those laws.
That paint that they made back then, they didn't have latex paint.
Right,
the majority of the semi-bottles had a high content of lead.
Right.
That's right. Whatever got on your wall, and I'm a professional painter. You use that paint back in the day, whatever got on your wall, you can wipe it off. I don't care what you put on there. And the paint would, yeah, had a hot continental living.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really toxic and places, the biggest cities like in New York, man, you know, you had tenement